Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I share a piece I've recently written for The Conversation on why it's okay to laugh at fat people. I chat with Jessica Kane about fatchin, and I spotlight a blog from adipose activist on the health conundrum. I've recently begun writing pieces for The Conversation, an online magazine from Australia. The Conversation gets scholars and academics to write pieces for a lay audience, oftentimes synthesizing many pieces of research into a single coherent essay. The first piece that I wrote for The Conversation was published on February 16th, 2012. The title of the piece is Big Belly Laughs: Why Is It Okay to Laugh at Fat People? Recent articles on perceptions of overweight and obese people have attracted a lot of attention from those with something to say about the overweight and the obese. One point that seems clear from the comments following these articles is that it's okay to laugh at fat people. Hollywood entertainers such as Eddie Murphy, Mike Myers, Courtney Cox, and Gwyneth Paltrow have secured big paychecks and even bigger laughs by putting on fat suits. But why do we find this funny? Why are fat suits and the act of dressing up as fat for the sake of laughs not considered offensive as other forms of derogatory behavior, for instance, as blackface? Stigma against fat people is well researched and documented. Even the sight of two fat people kissing is apparently too gross for some to handle. If you find yourself skeptical about the level of hostility directed at fat people, just wait a few hours and then read the comments at the end of this piece, or read the comments about earlier pieces about obesity and fatness on The Conversation. Notice how some people will hide their contempt behind concern. I'm just thinking of health. Others will cloak it in a perceived cost to themselves. Obesity costs taxpayers X amount of dollars. Maybe we laugh at fat people because we believe that fat people should be blamed for their fatness. We think that fat people are fat because they eat too much and never exercise. Of course, none of this bears out in research. Research has yet to establish a way for a fat body to become and stay a slim body. And permanent weight loss is not possible for 95% of the population. Another reason we may feel comfortable laughing at fat bodies is because we believe we can assess an individual's moral and personal characteristics by their body. Fat bodies tell us that the person is lazy, out of control, and lacking willpower, characteristics that are all considered undesirable. If someone is lacking morally, then we feel all right, perhaps even justified, in our taunting. We have the moral high ground, and really, we're just shaming them for their own good. What if laughing at fat people is a safe way to express our other biases and prejudices? While it's incorrect to assert that fat prejudice is the last socially acceptable kind of prejudice, it is true that unlike other areas of oppression, for example, racism, sexism, and classism, there are no legal protections based on weight or height in most countries. And because poor people are more likely to be fat than people with more money, women are more likely to be fat than men, and ethnic minorities are more likely to be fat than whites, fat prejudice and discrimination are likely tied into other forms of oppression. Consider a list of traits associated with fatness: lazy, stupid, undisciplined, unattractive, unsuccessful, against a list of traits associated with thinness: active, smart, disciplined, attractive, successful. Now replace the words fat and thin with poor and rich, or black and white. People of all body sizes laugh at fatness, including fat people, because many believe their fatness is a temporary state due to a lack of such variables as time, energy, willpower, or even illness. In fact, fat people are just as likely to hold anti-fat attitudes as slim people because they internalize the attitude they're surrounded with their entire lives. Joining me today is Jessica Kane, an emerging media mogul and conference crusader for fat women. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on Friend of Maryland.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So I invited you on because I stumbled across your blog and noticed that you were doing a lot of stuff about like fatchen and inspiring confidence in fat women. And that work is just so important. So can you tell me kind of how you got into that?
You know how I got into it? I am a fat girl who loves clothes. And I happen to have, you know, I'm lucky to have the skills to do the graphic design and create the technical back end of what I do. And I got into it because it's necessary. I feel there's not enough resources for girls my size, which is a US 26.
Right. So in terms of like when I think of a lot of the fatchen blogs that I follow, it seems like a lot of them are like US size, like maybe 14, 16 or US size 18, 20.
Mm-hmm. They are definitely on the smaller end. And I don't think it's because those girls aren't out there, but I think that maybe they're not, you know, the bigger bloggers don't get enough attention from the brands and such to get, you know, the traffic. And I've been lucky enough to have brands talk about me, which therefore, you know, ups my audience.
So what kind of, I mean, if a woman who's a size, so like we're talking like US, like 26, 28, which would be a UK 30, 32 or a New Zealand 22, 24, what are they going to learn? What are they going to get out of going to your site?
My site really is about empowerment. I say I'm a confidence crusader because I feel so many women are even just scared to put on things that they don't know will look good or fit. And we have these like traumatic experiences in a dressing room. So I try to use myself as the guinea pig of sorts to try things on and show women my size, what it would look like and how it could work. Because I feel like it gets a little traumatic when you look at fashion. So it's inspiration and also where do I buy this? Because a lot of the things I feature are things that you can just go buy right now.
So what are the brands that you like? What is the stuff that you tend to feature?
I feature brands, obviously, that go to my size, which are a little bit, it's more limited. I can't go to ASOS. I can't go to like a lot of like Dorothy Perkins. I wish I could, but I can't. But I go to places like Lane Bryant and Tora. They're huge U.S. brands. I love Simply Be. They have their new U.S. division. I guess they're out of the U.K. I love City Chic. Their sizing is on point and works for my size. And I also love Karen Kane. And Sealed with a Kiss Designs, actually, is a smaller U.S. brand. But I love the basics that they provide.
Yeah, we have City Chic here, actually. That's available here in New Zealand. In fact, we just got one in our new plaza here in Palmerston North. And I think their clothes are really cute, but they actually don't size my size. So, like, I'm
really?
A 30-32 American.
Okay.
And quite often, the few times when I've gone in, oftentimes the tops, I can get the tops to fit. But, yeah, the pants, just never going to happen.
See, I have that same problem, too. I'm smaller on the top, bigger on the bottom. My pants are always, like, the death of me. It's always an issue.
Yeah. Catherine once asked me, like, what would be, like, your dream, like, fashion, you know, item to have, like, design that would be perfect for you? And I said pants. I mean, and I know that that's not exciting, and I know that that's not what most people would probably say. But, yeah, like, finding, like, a really good quality pair of pants.
They can kind of change your world. When you finally find a pair of amazing pants that fit good, look good. And I love jeggings. I'm a jegging girl. And
okay.
I love the Svoboda jeggings, which I've featured multiple times. They are a premium brand in the United States, but oh my God, they're amazing. And they actually is going up to 32 soon. So that's good.
Okay. Well, I'll definitely have to check those out. So I know that you do a lot of other things besides your blog.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you
my
talk about those?
Actually kind of, it was a hobby and now it's turned into my business. It kind of wrapped into the rest of it. But as you said, I'm an aspiring media mogul. So I love media on all levels. I am a experienced marketing and advertising expert out of corporate America. So the plus size stuff is just an extension of my knowledge and trying to add something of value to the plus community.
Mm.
And so when Scorch Magazine is created, it's actually more of a super hub of plus fashion and voices and bloggers from around the world at scorchmag.com. And hopefully the intent is to syndicate our plus fashion content to various major outlets like HuffPost and AOL Style and so forth.
Right.
So that's the other side of it.
So were you the one that put Scorch together? Was that kind of your initiative?
Well, it was my initiative. I did have a co-partner with me at the time, and we worked on it together. But yeah, I was a co-founder, and now I am the sole owner and a manager of it.
It's so interesting to me, though, in the sense that, you know, because you obviously have said that kind of your background is kind of like corporate.
It's totally corporate, yeah.
Yeah. So, what exactly in terms of like moving from like kind of corporate kind of, you know, marketing work and branding and whatnot, like how exactly did you make the move from that into something that's obviously not just like your profession now, but also like your passion and your personal hobby?
Yeah. I swear, I'm living the dream world right now because I'm actually, my job is my passion, my love. And I made the jump because I started slowly. I was still working as a marketing director at some large companies, and we started Scorch, and we had great traffic, and I used my skill to sell ads and build partnership with brands because we go above and beyond selling ads. I use my skills in the plus market to help those businesses market and brand effectively to reach and communicate and relate to the plus-size woman. So that's the difference.
Well, that sounds just, like, awesome.
Well, you know, in the plus community especially, you have so many new startups. There's not very many big brands that can afford to have a whole marketing department, yet they're still competing against those big brands. So I feel that, you know, I try to bring something extra to it, and I almost work as their marketing consultant as well because, like you said, it's my passion, and I care about these brands because they have great product, and I want to connect them to the reader.
You mentioned already that, you know, for a lot of fat women, engaging with fashion or even, you know, trying to find things that fit or going shopping can be difficult. A lot of us have traumatic experiences in our background.
I
have one as well, or more than one. So what is it that you hope that the work that you do accomplish? Like, you know, what is kind of your goal in all of this?
My goal is, and you know, I don't know what my professional goal is, but my goal is a very like holistic one where I truly want to just empower women to a point where you just stop hating on yourself, stop hating on other people, stop the judgment, stop. Just really, it's a big stop sign. Because I think in the end, I was this size many years ago and I hated myself. I was so mean to myself. I looked horrible. I felt horrible because it's just a vicious cycle. I lost weight, I've gained weight, and now I'm back at that size, actually, and my mind frame is totally different because I found that the weight was not the problem, and so many women blame it on their weight, that they're not professionally where they want to be or whatever, and I think that, yes, those circumstances exist. However, I also believe that how we see ourselves has a huge indication of how we're treated in society, and I refuse to go out of this house not feeling confident and proud of my body and proud of who I am.
And so what role does fashion play in that for you?
You know, it's funny. I feel like fashion is such a major role because if I didn't have the clothes that I wear that make me feel good about myself, I wouldn't be that powerful woman I want to be in that board meeting or that interview or whatever. I think fashion is vitally important because it does empower us emotionally. Fashion is a very emotional thing.
So for any listener out there who's listening who has never really engaged with fashion and they hate going shopping because it's not a fun experience for them, like what would you kind of, you know, if they were looking to make a change, what kind of recommendations would you give them or what would you say the first step would be?
I feel like the first step is going through your closet and throwing out all the crap that doesn't make you feel good. And most of the time, right, most of the time you'll end up with four things left. You're like, oh, crap, I need to go shopping now. You have to get, it's like a crutch, these clothes that you keep in your closet that just do not help you emotionally at all, yet we're still like, you know, we can't let go of them. That's the first step. Get rid of the clothes that don't make you feel good, don't fit, that won't fit, whatever. And then actually go try stuff on. It is going to be harder to find things that fit if you're especially a fat girl like me, you know, on the bigger end. But it's not an emotional issue. Don't take it so emotionally or so personally if something doesn't fit right, because there are a million different shapes and sizes, and it's trial and error. And through trial and error, I've learned where to go and how to fit my body the way I like to be fit.
Well, and I think you make a really good point in terms of about like how personally we take stuff when it doesn't like fit. So, I mean, I know that even before I came to fat activism and before I became a fat activist, I would often, you know, be sharing kind of clothing stories with friends or shopping with friends and whatnot. And my response, you know, if something didn't fit, I'd be like, oh, well, you know, they don't make that in my size, rather mm-hmm. than like, I don't fit their clothes. And mm-hmm. it's a small distinction to make, but I found that for me, it was really powerful to keep in mind that, you know, it's not that there's something wrong with my body. It's that exactly. this store didn't make what I needed.
Absolutely. And as you, I mean, it, the fact of the matter is, the more weight you have on your body, the various shapes are going to be extremely, you know, different. We carry our weight so differently, like some more up, some more down, some more on our legs, blah, blah, blah. So on the manufacturing side, it's a lot harder to make clothes in the bigger spectrum that will fit the majority of the women. Mm. So I know, and I've spoken to these brands personally, one-on-one. I go to these businesses, I go to the headquarters, and I talk to everyone. And I know they're trying their best. That's why I say don't take it personal, because they're cut for certain people and you find the brands that cut best for your body.
Well, Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
This has been a lot of fun. I always like talking about fashion, even though I don't consider myself a very fashionable person.
I'm all fired up now. Let's go.
Yeah, right. So just one more time for the listeners who didn't catch it earlier. What's your blog?
Lifeandstyleofjessica.com.
Lifeandstyleofjessica.com. Well, that is awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
In the spotlight today is a piece from the blog Adipose Activist. The piece is entitled The Health Conundrum and was posted on March 10, 2012. Quote, "The biggest arguments I hear from people against fat acceptance is typically something about the following. Being fat isn't healthy. It's been proven. You're going to get diabetes. You might be healthy now, but what happens when it catches up with you?" And so on and so forth. Now, I've gone over in my sticky post how much of the so-called facts about obesity are biased, incorrect, are blown completely out of proportion. And I stand by all of that. Weight simply doesn't determine your health. Full stop. Fat people can be healthy, just as thin people can be unhealthy. This is one of the main points I would like people who read my blog to take away from it. However, within the fat community itself, whilst combating fat shaming and bashing and stereotypes, I've come to realize that fat activism has its very own good fatty, bad fatty dichotomy. Read an excellent post about that by Tasha Fierce. When combating fat hate, I tend to see the same arguments over and over from fat people. I eat healthy and go to the gym. I'm vegetarian. I follow health in every size. My blood pressure, cholesterol, and glucose are totally normal. I have hypothyroidism, Cushing's, a low metabolism. I understand that these people are trying to prove that fat doesn't equate to healthy, but in doing that, a perhaps unintended consequence is that it causes a huge rift within the fat acceptance movement itself. There are fat people who don't work out, who don't want to work out, who live off junk food and being sedentary. There are fat people with diabetes and heart disease. There are fat people in the feeder community who enjoy eating unhealthy foods and enjoy gaining weight. There are fat people who simply don't have access to healthier foods or the ability to be as physically active as they'd like to be. There are unhealthy fat people. What about them? Since they are so-called bad fatties, are they somehow less worthy of respect? I've had friends of mine who felt like their voices didn't matter, who flat out refused to speak up, because they assume that since they're not healthy or virtuous, they do nothing but exacerbate stereotypes about fat. And this kind of mindset is crippling to the community at large. When I represent fat acceptance, I represent it for all people. Skinny people, fat people, disabled people, healthy people, unhealthy people, an entire spectrum. Your personal health does not invalidate the movement. The very crux of fat acceptance is the mindset that all bodies are good bodies. Is the mindset that everyone deserves respect, not to be judged, not to be lambasted for their choices. Health is absolutely important, but it's not a high priority for many people, and that is okay. At the end of the day, your body, the only thing that's 100% yours. You can do with it what you want. We all end up the same way, some of us sooner than others, but dead is dead. You have, after all, the right to use your body as you see fit. To some people, keeping in excellent shape and only eating certain things make them feel good. To other people, not working up a sweat and eating anything with sugar or carbs makes them feel good. To still other people, it's a combination or something different. You may not be able to understand why someone else makes the choices with their body that they do, but that's okay because you don't have to understand. It's not your body. You don't have to understand, but you do have to accept. You do not owe health to anyone. You don't even need to bring it up. Health is private. Being a so-called healthy fatty does not give you any leverage over health, that person who's not healthy. And it's important that people realize this. To everyone who's scared to speak out in support of fat acceptance because of their own personal health, please don't be scared. We need you. Your voices are so important. Please let them be heard. End quote. Closing the show is Gossip with Love Long Distance.
Calling yourself a romantic, let me explain. Been across the whole Atlantic and back again. I had it with your antics, your childish games.